From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
California Chrome with Espinosa going for the whip is still in front. Arrogate trying his heart out. California Chrome from Arrogate, a pulsating climax to the classic. Arrogate takes the lead and wins. Arrogate beats California Chrome.
Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Classic Empire to the 16th, about a length and a half. Not this time, is gradually wearing him down. Classic Empire, not this time. Classic Empire, Classic Empire by a neck, not this time. They finished a straight in front of the rest.
It is Exaggerator in front. No, Nyquist switches back to the outside. Exaggerator down to the 16th pole. The Gutty Nyquist is coming out of it second. And then Stradivari, followed by Cherry Wine. But Exaggerator has turned the tables. He has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Good morning once again, everyone. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday to everyone throughout HRN Nation. Happy to have you with us this morning here on the Equine Forum. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Now just 133 days, 7 hours, 32 minutes, and 37 seconds away from the first Saturday in May. That'll warm you up on this cool afternoon or morning, whatever it is now. I guess it's morning now. A cool Saturday morning here in the Bluegrass. And for those of you tuning in coast to coast on SiriusXM, we welcome you on SiriusXM Channel 93. For those listening on our website, horseracingradio.net, you're listening worldwide on our site. And for those of you tuning in on our affiliates in Lexington and Louisville, happy to have you with us again on this Christmas Eve morning. Joined in studio by a special guest co-host. You might be wondering where the Pontiff of the Pick Four is, but he is... Well, he's not here today. He's enjoying a little time with the family out in California, enjoying a little Christmas break. So Jetta Vaughns, who you heard on the program last week, is sitting in with me here on the program this morning, and it's going to be a busy show. We'll tell you about that in just a couple of minutes. Jetta, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Happy to have you on board with me here today. You got all your Christmas shopping done?
Yes, I did.
You better. You're running out of time.
I actually do like to do some last-minute Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve just to go out to the crowd and just feel the spirit, and everyone's in such a good mood, and throw a little money out there, buy random gifts.
I used to do all my shopping on Christmas Eve. I was
that
guy.
Specialist.
I was out there last minute special. I was running around to the mall trying to get everything done. I've since gotten a little bit better about that, mainly because I have to, because on Christmas Eve we do a big dinner and all this kind of stuff. So I've really, out of necessity, had to become better, but I was that guy on Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve shopping ends up in a lot of chia pet sales, I assume.
I never did go the chia pet route, but there's a lot of things that I got on Christmas Eve just out of desperation that I'm sure were returned the very day after Christmas. I'm sure they were. Speaking of the day after Christmas, we're just a couple of days away from the opening, that traditional day after Christmas opening at Santa Anita in Arcadia, California, and that will kick off their winter-spring meet, which leads up to the Santa Anita Derby, which is always the highlight. It's a meet that features the big cap, but on opening day, it features a couple of really nice Grade 1s, including the Grade 1 Malibu for the 3-year-old boys and the Grade 1 La Brea Stakes for the 3-year-old fillies. Now, the La Brea drew a field of 8, the Malibu a field of 10. It's part of a program that includes 4 graded stakes coming up on Monday. And boy, what a day that's going to be.
It's going to be very exciting. Opening day at Santa Anita is just, it's a wonderful day of racing. I love that going the day after Christmas. I go there instead of doing my after Christmas shopping. It's always very crowded and festive, and you get some of the best racing. Get a nice highlight of the 3-year-olds that are to come, especially for Derby preps.
You're a California girl, Southern California girl, and you told the story last week about working with Dwayne Lucas and Richard Mandela and spending time in their barns out in the LA area. Mm-hmm. How special is that day after Christmas, opening day at Santa Anita?
It's indescribable. See, you go out on Christmas morning, and for the horsemen, you're there, you're at Clocker's Corner, you're walking through the backstretch, and everyone's jolly, and you're getting your eggnog from Dean Greenman, and Rosie at Clocker's Corner is hooking you up.
I love Rosie.
And it's just a wonderful atmosphere. So to carry it on into the next day and just have some really good racing is very special, especially for me as an Arcadia native. So
Jude tells a story about his family and sitting around Christmas Day handicapping, and his mom, it would drive his mom crazy, because the first thing they would do right after the open presents would open the racing form, and they'd spend the whole day handicapping the opening day card at Santa Anita. Were you the same way?
Similar scene in my household. Everyone was handicapping. We were all getting ready for the next day of racing, planning our outfits, planning our meal, the whole nine.
Well, let me tell you something. This show over the course of the next 2 hours is going to be extremely busy. So we're going to get to our first break here momentarily. But before we do that, we want to tell people what's coming up. And one of the things coming up, we're going to focus on that opening day card with Rick Hammerly, who is the racing secretary at Santa Anita. He's going to join us in the second half of the program. So stay tuned for that conversation. But right after our first break, I was kind of looking for something a little bit different here on this Christmas Eve edition of the show. I wanted kind of a feel-good story, and there's so many great stories in thoroughbred racing that we bring to people throughout the year. One of those stories involves a girl by the name of Vanessa Romberg, and if you haven't heard of her, she's a jockey that rides at Turf Paradise in Arizona. Now, Vanessa was enjoying an extremely successful career as an investment banker. She was doing extremely well, making good money. She left all of that behind 4 years ago at the age of 39 to pursue her lifelong dream of being a jockey. She won her first race on December 11th, at least her first race here in the state. She had won in other countries, but so she is going to join us right after the first break, and that was such a cool story.
That's an awesome story. It just goes to show it's never too late to try and achieve your dream.
That was her take. When you read through some of the stuff that she was quoted as saying after that race, this was a dream come true for her.
I imagine it is. Yeah. I imagine it was, just to hear your name as you're coming into the winner's circle, you know?
It's got to be pretty special. We'll talk to Vanessa about that after our first break here, right around 8:12 Eastern time. Jeff Bloom, you know him, working with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He's the man behind Bloom Racing. He's going to be with us at 8:35 Eastern, and he's going to tell you all about the strategy and the philosophy of putting together successful racing partnerships. And if you're looking for a partnership to get involved with, we tell you throughout the year, hey, you know, guys at West Point, they do a great job with Terry Finley. Jeff Bloom is another one who, by the way, came up under Terry Finley, working for him at West Point, now doing his own thing with Bloom Racing and having an awful lot of success. So we'll talk to Jeff, 8:35 Eastern. 9 o'clock Eastern, Jay Privman from the Daily Racing Forum will be with us. He's going to tell us all about that situation with Masochistic, who was disqualified from second in this year's Breeders' Cup Sprint because of a steroid, a legal steroid, that was found in his system actually before the race. So we're going to talk to Jay Privman about that, and that comes up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Again, Rick Hammerly, 9:25 Eastern time, and right toward the end of the show at 9:40 Eastern, Joe Applebaum, who is the winner of the BCBC handicapping contest at the Breeders' Cup this year. He's getting set to go for a $3 million bonus in the NHC at the end of January in Vegas, if he can pull off a victory in that handicapping contest too. So we'll talk to Joe coming up at the end of the show. All of that is still ahead over the course of the next 2 hours. So stay with us. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Adina Stallion Ghost Sapper, the sire of 7 Graded Stakes winners in 2016, including Grade 1 winners Shaman Ghost and Green Zapper, plus the exciting undefeated 2-year-old McCracken.
But McCracken is bearing down on the outside. Here's McCracken in Wild Shot with a 16th to go, and McCracken grabs the lead 100 yards out, and he does it again. McCracken wins the Kentucky Jockey Club from off the pace by a length.
McCracken stamped himself a major Kentucky Derby contender with another impressive victory at Churchill Downs. Ghost Sapper has produced 9 Grade 1 winners, 6 millionaires, and 3 champions, so it's easy to see why his yearlings have been so well received in 2016, selling for up to $825,000. Ghost Sapper was the number 4 Keeneland September Book 1 sire, with yearlings averaging $417,000. Ghost Sapper, standing at Adina Springs. Learn more by visiting adinastallions.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
They're coming down for the finish. It's Catapult with the lead. Strike Midnight. Challenged but could not surpass Catapults, who wins the Gio Ponti Stakes.
Catapults' determined victory in the Gio Ponti Stakes at Aqueduct made the $350,000 yearling purchase the newest stakes winner for leading sire Kitten's Joy. With over $10 million in progeny earnings, Kitten's Joy is the leading turf sire in America for the fourth year in a row and currently ranks number 5 on the general sire list. Kitten's Joy, world class at Ramsey Farm.
Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interests and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the Conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nicholas Perfect is third outside of Dixie Vision, and then it's 2.5 back to Miss Vito. Closing in from the back is Trigo Pedigo. Head of lane, Tis My Cherie still in front. Tis My Cherie, Plus Perfect beginning to make strides. Here comes Plus Perfect to gray. Tis My Cherie inside the final furlong, taken on by Plus Perfect. Then it's Big Wave Betty got in the heels of horses, and here's Miss Vito flying on the outside. Plus Perfect gonna have to hold off Miss Vito. Plus Perfect, Miss Vito, Plus Perfect the winner. Plus Perfect and Apprentice Vanessa Romberg win the 8th.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, special guest co-host Jetta Vaughn sitting in with me in our Lexington, Kentucky studios this morning. Plus Perfect, the winner of the 8th race at Turf Paradise back on December 11th. And that was no ordinary win for Plus Perfect. It came with apprentice jockey Vanessa Romberg aboard. We told you at the top of the show, Vanessa left a successful career as an investment banker to become a jockey. And you say, okay, well, that's great. We hear trainers doing that all the time, and we hear about jockeys doing this from time to time. But what made it unique is that Vanessa made that decision to make that career move at the age of 39. She is now 43, and she is now a winner here in the United States. And congratulations to Vanessa on that accomplishment. And we welcome her to the Equine Forum here this morning. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Happy to have you on board with us. And congratulations on that win. And I guess, you know, the first question before we talk about that race and that win is, what possesses somebody to make that move from a very successful career and go on to be a jockey at the age of 39? What possesses somebody to make that move?
Yes, well, people, I think my family, they thought I was a little bit crazy to do that. But, you know, I have that dream since I'm a 6 years old little girl. I wanted to be a jockey. For some reason, in particular, my parents that were very scared about that career, I couldn't do it. And, at 36, my father died. I get through a divorce, and I started to question myself a lot about what I was, what really make me happy. And a friend of mine just asked me a question, saying, "Don't think don't think about limits. Just say what you would like to do. And the first thing coming into my mind was, I want to be a jockey. And I started to laugh and to say, that's impossible. I was 36 at that moment, but the idea just stayed there. And I 39, I say, why not? Just give a try. I wanted to do one race, you know, just try. And here I am.
How scary was it to finally say, I'm going to leave all of this behind and I'm going to take a shot to pursue my dream? Is that a scary thing?
Yes, it is scary. It is scary. Everybody around tell you that's a bad idea. And you have to go for your dream. And what I learned is to trust myself that I will find a solution step after step. You don't have to figure out the whole plan on one day. It was a challenge financially also. I had to live on my savings for 2 years while I was learning. It was not a very easy decision, but then you commit and every day you solve something else and you go on. And you just have to sometimes to go to the swimming pool to learn how to swim.
That sounds like the keys to success right there to me.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so inspirational, Vanessa.
Oh, thank you. I hope more people will do more about their dreams and doing things that make them happy, you know? That's so important.
Yes, sir. It's more to life than just going to work and working and going home. Absolutely.
Vanessa, that race call we played coming out of the break with Plus Perfect winning, that was your first win in the United States, but you had actually won races in Mexico, which is where you started your riding career. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. I won 3 races in Mexico with the same mare. And then I got to the U.S., which was for me really a big dream, you know, to ride in the U.S. And I finally, 10 days ago, more or less, I won my first race here. And I was so, so happy. I couldn't believe it.
How did that compare to your first win ever in Mexico?
Oh, my first win was something very, very important too. It was my first race in Mexico, and it was my first win. I have 2 children, and they had to make a lot of sacrifices with me. And for me, it was really important to show them and demonstrate them that everything is possible. So this first win I had in Mexico was a victory for them too.
Wow, that's really exciting.
Yes.
I'm
just blown away by Vanessa. I can't think of anything to ask her, anything to say. She's just putting it all out there. She's living the life, living the dream. I do have one question, though, Vanessa. As we know, you had very, very little horse riding experience in your background. And you mentioned you went to Mexico and you learned. How did you learn? Who taught you? And what was the process that you went through to actually become a jockey?
Okay. I learned almost from scratch, you know. Mm-hmm. I was in the office during 20 years, so I was not doing a lot of sports, almost nothing, working all the time. So I was in a very bad condition, you know, bad shape physically. And I started from scratch, and the first month was awful. I met a trainer. He decided to help me first with a pony, which is the first step, you know. You go on the track, jogging, trying to make more exercise to have more condition on your legs. And at that moment, I was going back to the office after 8. I was from 6 to 8 to the track, then going back home, change, and at 8:30 I was at my office. And I couldn't walk in my office. It was awful. Every muscle was hurting me so much. And little by little, I learned. I spent like that 3-4 months. Then I decided to quit my job because I really had to take a decision to work in finance and have a hobby with horses more quiet, you know, or being a jockey and being totally focused on that. And little by little, you start with a pony, jogging, then galloping, then with a very gentle and nice race horse, and they teach you how to do that, you know.
Talking with jockey Vanessa Romberg here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Vanessa, you mentioned your family and your sons, and you mentioned the lifestyle change that you had to go through when you decided to make this career change and become a jockey. Was there ever a moment along this journey where you said, maybe I made the wrong decision, maybe this was a mistake?
Yes, many times. I have cried sometimes, you know, like saying, "Oh, I'm not good at that. I cannot do that." Things, you know. Sometimes you just want to give up because when you're starting at 40, this is not the same thing that started at 20. Your muscles, they are not built the same way. You have to. I had to build them from scratch, you know, and it was really hard. I had a couple of accidents too. I broke my mouth, 30 stitches in an accident, 2 ribs. Well, at that point, sometimes you question yourself and you say, okay, is it a good idea? I was thinking maybe this is not something I'm good at. But then you have a lot of people around in the track that also support you and tell you, no, you're doing good. You're just learning. Go on. You will reach your dream, and then the day after, you just forgot the bad things and you go on.
So to come back on December 11th and win that first race here in the United States, it really completes that lifelong dream that you've always had to be a jockey and to be successful. I know you're still looking to win many, many more races, but take me back to that moment when Plus Perfect crosses the finish line at Turf Paradise.
Oh, it was a great moment. Also, because I was riding for a trainer, Lauren Barat, it was her first win as a trainer too. She's a trainer for now, like 3 months. So it was really important for both, and I was very, very, very happy. You know, and the other horse was coming into the straight. And we had to fight until the last moment. And there's a picture, and then you see my face looking at the other horse like, oh. But, yes, it was a great, great moment, really. Really, I was happy, and the colleagues were expecting me at the entrance of the jockey's room with, you know, the water, water and talc. It was really funny.
Yeah, the traditional ceremony for a jockey that wins their first race. That, Vanessa, that had to feel pretty good.
Oh, yes, yes. And
your official acceptance into the colony.
Yeah.
It was really nice. And to share that with all my colleagues, and they're so nice to me and always, you know, giving me advice. And that's helping me a lot. And to be, you know, this is a hard profession. And to count on the colleagues, it's so nice. It's really nice to be able, you know, to share those moments of happiness, and that's really great.
So, what does the future hold for Vanessa Romberg?
Well, I don't think I will have a 20 years career, but as long as my body is responding well, and as long as I am enjoying that, and I am enjoying a lot, so I will go on and try to do my best and to win as much as career races as I can, and that's all. We'll see on the way.
Well, it's been quite a ride for Vanessa Romberg, as you could hear her on the Equine Forum this morning. Vanessa, we want to wish you all the best going forward. Safe trip every time you get a leg up, and we'll be watching and we'll be cheering. Keep up the great work and keep it rolling.
Good luck, Vanessa.
Thank you very much. Have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you too, Vanessa. Merry Christmas.
Thank
and Vanessa Romberg, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel of the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. And just a quick sidebar note there, if you're looking for that last minute gift, you can go to EmbraceTheRace.com. E-gift cards and gift certificates are available. So you're looking for a great stocking stuffer for somebody on your list that's a horse racing fan, EmbraceTheRace.com is the place to go. What a great story.
That's a wonderful story. I loved every minute of it. For me, it was extremely special because you see this jockey, you know, she's 40-something. She's winning her first race here in America for a young woman who is training her first win here.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me as a woman in racing, it's especially powerful to see those kind of stories, you know?
Yeah, very special moment for Vanessa when she could get that victory aboard Plus Perfect back on December 11th. And, again, the culmination of what has been a lifelong passion and dream of hers, and she didn't let anything stand in her way. And she is now a successful jockey at Turf Paradise. So congratulations to Vanessa and all the best going forward there. Jeff Bloom from Bloom Racing is going to join us on the other side of this next break. But before we get to that, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington.
This man, during his lifetime of nearly 90 years, was synonymous with the thoroughbred racing as best as anybody could portray it. He was born in Fredericksburg, Texas, July 30th, 1880. That was the year the Great Hindu was a two-year-old, and a horse named Fonso won the Kentucky Derby over four rivals to earn $3,800. Our subject ran away from home at the age of 13 to become a jockey. He started as an exercise boy but wore silks in a race at the age of 14. That was long before he became a licensed jockey, although he had ridden at the age of 10 at Wild County Fairs in Texas. He never felt he was a good rider, but he had 1,117 recorded mounts and scored with 123 winners, a few of those against the likes of Immortals, Todd Sloan, and Snapper Garrison. He got too heavy to ride by the time he was 19, and therefore he opted for training to get his license at the age of 20 in 1900. He saddled his first winner in 1902, a horse named Guatama, at New Orleans on March 21st. Between 1902 and 1969, he saddled 1,993 winners, including the winners of more than 100 major stakes. His last winner was a four-year-old filly named Heartland, who won Aqueduct's feature by about 8 hours before he died on April 3rd, 1969. His first stakes winner was Beauclair, who took the Washington Cup at Benning's Racecourse near Washington, D.C. in 1907. He went on to train three Kentucky Derby winners and one Triple Crown winner. The latter was the great Clubfoot Comet Assault in 1946 in the brown and cream silks of the King Ranch. He saddled Bull Venture to win the 1936 Derby at 20-1 and another winner for the King Ranch Middle Ground in 1950. He had a rather unorthodox method of training horses, to say the least. Most trainers would not dare use an apprentice rider in a classic race. This man did it twice, in the Derby, and he won both of them. In 1936, when Ira Hanford on Bull Venture daringly fought through very tight quarters to score by a head over Brevity, and in 1950, when then 16-year-old Bill Bullen kept his mount on the rail to save ground the whole trip. He often said the best horse he had ever trained was Grey Lag, and he went on to say that Grey Lag may have been the singular best he had ever seen. He had bought him as a two-year-old from the Wizard of the Turf, John E. Madden, and raced him until three when Harry Sinclair bought him for $60,000, an unheard-of price at the time. Grey Lag raced for Sinclair and then ran Coca Stable from then on. He was reluctant to use superlatives, but he did feel his best horses besides Grey Lag were Saracen and Assault. His greatest loss was not Greylag, it was Stymie, who earned nearly $1 million after being claimed for $1,500. He liked to bet on horses and at one time said, quote, "People who like horses like to bet on them. People who don't bet on them don't belong at the racetrack," end of quote. He was elected to the Racing Hall of Fame in 1959 and was honored by the Thoroughbred Club of America in 1961. Even after a heart attack in 1961, he went on to be leading money-winning trainer in New York. At the age of 87 in 1968, he won 49 races, and that year he trained Gallen Bloom, who was juvenile title holder of that year. He was stoop-shouldered, walked with a bit of a shuffle, with his hand always thrust forward as if something of extraordinary interest was to occur just in front of him. This truly great trainer went shuffling off, so to speak, to the great paddock in the sky, April 3rd, 1969, as an octogenarian at the age of 88. He was the man from Texas, Max Hirsch.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
What is it about Tony's steaks and seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-544.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Power. Anchor Down has taken the lead once again, leaving Myositis Dan behind.
Passion.
Anchor Down has built a 5-length lead with just a 16th to the finish.
Performance.
Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Gainsway is proud to announce the newest addition to their stallion roster for the 2017 breeding season, Anchor Down. A son of Gainsway's perennial leading sire, Tappet, Anchor Down is a multiple graded stakes winner at Belmont Park who defeated Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Tamar Coase in the Grade 2 Kelso with a near track record time of 132.90 while earning a buyer speed figure of 108, the second highest dirt figure of 2016 at the distance. Out of a graded stakes winning 2-year-old, Anchor Down is a half brother to Grade 1 winning sprinter Sweet Lulu, who sold for $3 million as a broodmare, and a full brother to Grade 1 juvenile performer Iron Fist. Anchor Down, standing at Gainsway.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
They come for the top of the lane now, and Carve comes up to put ahead in front of Majestic City. Majestic City running a big one. He fights on every step. It's two back to Tapiture. In the final furlong, Majestic City is back in front. Here comes Tapiture late, though. Majestic City, Carve, and Tapiture. Majestic City, Majestic City, and Charles Lopez have won the 19th Lone Star Park Handicap. Carve was second, and Tapiture finished third.
Always nice to look back on that win by Majestic City in last year's Lone Star Park Handicap. Majestic City, owned by our good friend Jeff Bloom and Bloom Racing Stable. We're going to talk to Jeff momentarily right after we remind you that if you missed any portion of this show or any of our shows, you can head over to horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast At Your Leisure, Equine Forum, Jock Talk, Trainer Talk, the Weekend Stakes Preview, the Call-In Show. It's all there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Mike Penna, special guest co-host in studio with me this morning, filling in for the pontiff of the Pick Four. That's Jetta Vaughns. Jetta Vaughns, somebody who knows our next guest very well. That is former jockey, now racehorse owner, Jeff Bloom. Jeff, welcome, my friend.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Morning, Jeff.
Doing great. Thanks for getting up early with us on the West Coast, my friend.
You know me. Never sleep. Not for the good of the show, Mike.
Well done. People can catch Jeff Bloom as part of our coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as well. Jeff, you know, one thing I thought would be cool on this Christmas Eve edition of the show would be to kind of educate people. And there's a lot of people listening that have come up to us throughout the year and said, hey, you know, I'd like to get involved in racing. What do you recommend? How do I do it? Who do I talk to? What's the best way to go about it? Well, racing partnerships have become kind of the thing nowadays, and we see so many partnerships all over the country. You've had so much success with your Bloom Racing. Talk about that approach to putting together racing partnerships, and what do you tell new people when they come up to you and ask you how they should get started?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Mike. And, you know, it used to be very intimidating for people that hadn't had any contacts or connection to the racing industry. In terms of how to get involved, participating as an owner, these racing partnerships have certainly taken a lot of the intimidation factor out of the equation. The first thing really comes down to helping level set expectations for people, especially people, again, who haven't ever had any taste of being a racehorse owner. And then really doing homework and figuring out the people that they're going to be involved with throughout this process, making sure they're comfortable with them, trusting those people that are going to help educate them. Some of the key elements really come down to communication. Communication's everything, especially in the beginning stages, whether somebody's getting involved with a racing prospect that's, say, a yearling, and it's going to be a year and a half before the horse ever makes it to the races, or if they're getting involved on a two-year-old. There's just a lot of things that are going to happen throughout the process of getting the horse prepped and ready. And so communication is key. Transparency is key. Education and then participation. I always tell people, you know, this is an experience like no other. You're going to get to spend time being an owner of a small sports franchise. Embrace it. Spend time on the backstretch. Spend time with the individuals that care for your horse and that are involved in that whole process. And then ultimately, you want to have fun. You know, I hear a lot people say, well, you know, I don't want to jinx how things are going. They're going so well. Or I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. You know, we're not there yet. We still need to do this. And, you know, what I always tell people is embrace the fun. When it's good, enjoy it, celebrate it, because things change so fast in this game. And you really want to ride those highs, because as we all know that are involved in horse racing, it's an extreme high and low kind of roller coaster ride.
Jeff, you started by talking about doing your homework and finding that person that you feel comfortable doing business with. How does somebody that isn't familiar with racing, doesn't have access to the people that you and I do by doing this every single day, how does somebody find those individuals and go about doing that?
Yeah, so, I mean, nowadays with technology, it's become so much easier for people to simply go onto their computer, go online, and do a Google search for horse racing partnerships, or in their respective regions, the locations that people are, in terms of whether they're in the East Coast or the West Coast, there's organizations that support bringing new owners into the game. For instance, in California, you have the Thoroughbred Owners of California. It's an organization that not only looks after the care and welfare of its owners and racing in the state, but has new owner conferences where people can get introduced to people that run partnership companies and meet trainers if they want to go that route directly with the trainer. So I always suggest, you know, get on your computer, look at things from a sort of macro level, like the different types of groups that are out there, and then hone in a little bit and look at your state or even the racetrack that you live close to and say, okay, well, what kind of organizations are here that welcome people learning about becoming a racehorse owner? Because it is complicated, you know, if you don't know anybody, but there are all kinds of opportunities out there to get educated. There's a number of websites that really lean towards educating people that want to learn more about becoming a racehorse owner.
What year did you first start Bloom Racing?
Oh my God, you're going to talk dates. I'm really bad. I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I want to say
too many concussions.
Our first year would have been what, 2011, I guess, when we went out on our own and started campaigning. Our first horse, who we were listening to on the lead in Majestic City.
What's the most significant lesson that you've learned since starting your partnerships in 2011?
You're always learning, and you know, you're only as good as the people that you rely on to help you accomplish the things you need to accomplish. So, you know, whether it's racing horses or, you know, developing a broodmare band or looking to get involved in various other investments to help fund the racing side, there's always going to be other people that you're going to have to rely on. And so I think the key is really utilizing, you know, that network of contacts that you have and always, you know, just trying to stay one step ahead of the other guy. I mean, there's no rest in this game. It's just a constant, you know, you got to keep going. You got to keep searching. You know, even, you know, talking about how do you identify, you know, good young prospects. It's not just going to a horse auction, but it's, you know, the underlying research and work that goes into developing the opportunities. In other words, you know, checking in on horses before they ever make it to an auction or understanding the families of some of the horses you're looking at. So I'd say, you know, it's a long answer to your question, but it's a constant drive that ties into, you know, work and utilizing good people that you know you can trust and rely on. And again, everything really for me and what we do in our business, not only in the way we work with our client investors, but the people that we work with as our vendors, is it comes down to trust and communication.
Talking with Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jeff, of course, through his Bloom Racing, has had an awful lot of success. And you bring up picking out horses at the sales and trying to find the next great prospect, so to speak. What's your philosophy, Jeff? When you show up at a sale, I see how hard you work. I see how many hours you put in going from barn to barn and looking at as many horses as you possibly can. What's your philosophy in terms of selecting these young horses that you think are going to be a good fit for your program?
Yeah, Mike. So there are the mechanics of that whole process, which include, you know, organization, having some structure to your methodology in terms of how you're going to go through and evaluate horses, you know, in a timely fashion and way the ways that you're going to do that once you start looking at the horses. And then there's the actual physical part of it where, you know, you take the years of experience that you have in being around horses. Fortunately for me, when I got into the game, the gentleman that really taught me everything I know from the ground up insisted that I learn about the horse from the ground up. So what I try to do is I come into a sale extremely organized with a game plan, with an understanding of what our budget is, what it is that our objectives are relative to the horses and the amounts we're willing to spend. And then, you know, I look at my notes that I've put together over the years, both from a macro level and from a micro level. In other words, I know who the horses are in the catalog. What are my notes on some of those horses that I, if it's a two-year-old sale, I've seen a lot of those horses at the yearling sales, or what are my notes from seeing those horses at the farm? And then when you're looking at horses, there are very specific things that people look at when they're evaluating a horse, you know, the conformation of the horse, how the horse is put together. I think the most important thing, really, and this is the key differentiator for people, is, you know, your gut instinct, because it's not all black and white. And so it comes down to really being able to step back and trusting what you've learned and taken in over the years when you look at a horse and what you see in that horse's eyes. Because, you know, it's easy to look at a horse and understand their conformation, but the hard part is getting in between, you know, their eyes and into their head and seeing what kind of heart they have and the way a horse is going to handle themselves, what kind of presence they have. And at the end of the day, you know, you're the one making the decision, you know, when the hammer drops. And so I always go in with a strong conviction, an understanding of what my, you know, willingness to take on is with the risk associated with the way a horse is put together, and then sticking with that gut, you know, and going with it.
Going with your gut is very important, because perfect conformation does not always guarantee a winning equine.
Yeah, you hear him talk about
the
look.
It's far from it, and also perfect conformation always translates into lots and lots of money. And so, you know, for those of us who aren't spending, you know, $1.8 million on a nice-looking yearling, we're trying to find those little holes, the diamonds in the rough that some people might be overlooking. You know, you look at a horse and you try to extrapolate how a horse's hind end is going to develop if they're a little bit light, or, you know, those kinds of things. And I think that's where, again, it comes into having years and years of experience, being on the ground, being on top of, being around the horse, and really just trying to take a look and say, okay, I think this horse has these attributes. And there, you know, you have these check boxes, right, when you're looking at a horse, when you're looking at what is it that I'm trying to find in a racehorse. And there, it's rare that a horse is going to be able to check off every one of those boxes, but what can I live with, and what can I live with at that price point?
It's being able to imagine forward into what they're going
to
become.
Yeah, you have to be a fortune teller almost, right? You have to be able to look into the future and see what this horse might look like up the road. Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jeff, when I asked Jetta to sit in and co-host the program with me, she said, oh, great, Jeff's coming on. I've known him since I was like 4 years old. And she told me, I guess it was her dad that was an assistant trainer. Is
yes.
that what you said, Jetta?
Yeah, they were.
And when Jeff was riding for that barn?
Yes, they won many races together.
Jeff, do you remember that?
Do I remember that? I mean, my God, a good part of my teenage years were spent traveling around the country with Jetta's dad. We took on the world. We basically owned the fair circuit. It was Jetta's dad, Short Man, as we call him, and myself kind of going out there in the morning and working with the horses and then standing in the winner's circle. In fact, it was really funny. I hadn't seen Jetta for such a long time, and we crossed paths, you know, on the backstretch out here in California. It's like, oh, my God, I was just looking at a wind photo of me and your dad, you know. And I would say 40% of my wind photos probably include a picture that has Jetta's dad, Short Man, in there with me.
Wow. Yesterday when I told him you were going to be on the show, he said, Jeff Bloom, man, I love that guy.
We had a lot of fun together, that's for sure. And I'll tell you what. Your dad, arguably one of the best horsemen in the business, that many people that didn't spend time around him, you know, if they weren't out here on the West Coast, wouldn't know. But Short Man, he's about as good as they get when it comes to knowing how to work with a horse, that's for sure.
Jeff, was that before you became a Manitoba Derby winner?
I think that's what allowed me to get to the point of becoming a Manitoba Derby winner. Yeah, so this was like in my early days as an apprentice, and it was actually like right at the tail end of when jockeys had contracts. Hal King was the main trainer, and then Hal's son John had a string of horses, and Short Man was part of that whole group, so we would break off and go on these runs around the fair circuit when
all
I was an apprentice,
yes.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, Jeff, listen, we appreciate you spending a little time with us, kind of filling people in on how they can get involved in the sport, and we can't recommend what you do strongly enough here on the program. So if people want to learn more, they can go to your website, bloomracing.com. If somebody does have questions, I know you're always willing to answer those questions for them. And even if you're not the right guy, you can point them in the right direction. How do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, give us a call. Our office number is 858-771-2030. They can always email as well. Easy to get a hold of us. My email is Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, at bloomracing.com. And all of our contact information, as you said, is up there on our website as well.
Yeah, bloomracing.com is the place to go. Jeff, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and the entire family, my friend. And we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks so much, and same to you guys.
All right, like all of our guests who appear on the program, Jeff receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. But, heck, he's got enough Embrace the Race stuff, so maybe we'll just... what the heck, we'll send it to him anyways. Don't forget, you can embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. And wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Going to get to another break. We'll come back and tell you what's ahead in a very busy second half of the show. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Upstart, the best 2- and 3-year-old son of leading sire Flatter.
But Upstart is pulling away, and he is pulling away impressively to win the Holy Bull.
Upstart became the East Coast leading Kentucky Derby contender after demolishing a star-studded field in the Grade 2 Holy Bull and retired a multiple graded stakes winner and 6 times Grade 1 placed with earnings of more than $1.7 million. Airdrie Stud's Upstart. Think about it.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich Shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan?
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Apollopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
There may be no live racing at Gulfstream Park this weekend, but championship meet action continues next week with the Grade 3 Mr. Prospector on Monday with a special 12 p.m. first post and the free Party in the Park New Year's Eve celebration next Saturday. Enjoy free music, party favors, a laser light show, plus drink specials and champagne bars all evening starting at 8 p.m. Or enjoy a special New Year's Eve menu in the Fountain Club. And don't forget, seats are still available for the $12 million Pegasus World Cup on January 28th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to reserve your seat today.
Claiborne Farm presents Algorithms. The son of Bernardini was undefeated, including a dominant 5-length victory over champion Hansen in the Holy Bull. Full or half-brother to 4 graded stakes winners, Algorithms has the pedigree, the speed, and the class to become the next star in this sensational sire line. His first crop 2-year-olds have posted lightning-fast breeze times and sales up to $180,000. Algorithms at Claiborne Farm.
Hey everyone, Mike Penna here. If you're in Kentucky and you love wine, you need to experience Lover's Leap Vineyards and Winery in Lawrenceburg. Just a short drive from Lexington, Lover's Leap is one of the oldest and largest vineyards in Kentucky. Stop in for an educational wine tasting or do what I love most. Simply kick back and relax on their wraparound porch while enjoying the view with a glass of their exceptional wine. And I can tell you, their wines are the perfect fit for all of your farm and company parties. So stop by for a visit today. It's Lover's Leap Winery in Lawrenceburg.
This is Elliot Walden. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Drey Fong and Masochistic are tearing strips off each other. Three lengths in front of AP Indian. The race setting up beautifully for him. Top of the stretch, Drey Fong, Masochistic clear from AP Indian. Drey Fong on the inside and Masochistic still battling it out. AP Indian making no impression. Mind Your Biscuits is bubbling to the surface. Drey Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Drey Fong's the leader. Drey Fong has won. Second, close, very tight. Masochistic or Mind Your Biscuits, AP Indian, a flat fourth.
Drey Fong, a winner of the Breeders' Cup Sprint back in November. The second-place finisher, Masochistic, disqualified from that second-place position. Mind Your Biscuits, who was third, now going to take home that second-place money. That's good for $255,000. If you haven't heard the story, the reason for the disqualification was because of a legal steroid that was found in the system of Masochistic after they tested. And we're going to be joined at 9 o'clock Eastern time by Jay Pribman from the Daily Racing Forum. He was the one who earlier this week reported on that particular issue. And we'll talk to Jay about Masochistic and about the situation with trainer Ron Ellis, who could be facing a suspension because of that, or certainly some penalties involved with that particular infraction. And if you know Ron Ellis and Jetta Vaughn sitting in studio for the Pontiff here this morning, Jetta, you said that you worked with Ron for several years. He's a guy that pretty much has had a squeaky clean resume in terms of any kind of infractions like this over the course of his long career with training racehorses. This really does come as a bit of a surprise.
It does. It comes as actually quite a shock because I know Ron to be very conscientious about the medication he gives, if he's even going to give medication. He's not a big medication guy in the first place. And over the course of 35 years, he's never had an infraction. There's a little thing where one horse showed up with a little bit too much Banamine in its system, but that's, you know, as far as any kind of anabolic steroids, which this is, he's never had an infraction. So
no, he has not. And it sounds as if, from reading everything, we'll talk to Jay about this and get more in depth with it at 9 o'clock Eastern. But it sounds as if it was one of those deals that he gave the horse the steroid as a therapeutic type of thing. The withdrawal time was 60 days. He gave it 68 days out, and there was still a fraction of that left in the horse's system when they tested. And, you know, again, it's one of those situations where a trainer in the sport trying to take all the right precautions and do things the right way, as Ron always has, and gets tripped up with something like this. And unfortunately, it happens in a big race like the Breeders' Cup.
It's just one of those things where the science just didn't measure up. A withdrawal time isn't an absolute time. It's an approximation, and with every horse it's different based on how quickly they're going to metabolize the particular drug. 68 days out, you know, it's 1 week outside of the withdrawal period, but it's still toeing the line. Yeah. It was still toeing the line, especially with a Breeders' Cup race on the line.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Jay more about this issue coming up in just a couple of minutes. Rick Hammerly is going to be with us in the second half of the program as well. Rick is the racing secretary at Santa Anita, and they are getting ready to kick off the 2016-2017 winter spring meet, which begins traditionally the day after Christmas. So coming up on Monday, we will see four greatest stakes on that opening day program, and Rick will be with us to tell us all about those races and some of the stars that you can look forward to seeing over the course of that meet. Joe Applebaum is going to be with us at the end of the program around 9:40 Eastern. Joe is a former football player at Yale, and he has coached college football for about 7 years and now has turned his attention to owning racehorses and won the BCBC handicapping contest at the Breeders' Cup because of winning that contest, Jetta. He is now eligible for a $3 million bonus if he can pull off a win in next month's National Handicapping Championship in Vegas.
That's quite a lot of money to bet with.
Yeah, it certainly
he could even buy racehorses with that money.
Pays a little bit better than being an assistant football coach, I think. That would be tremendous.
Probably a lot more fun, too.
Yeah, you and I were talking about it earlier before we came on the air, and you pointed out that if he wins that with the $3 million bonus, if he wins the NHC, based on the money he's already won at the BCBC, which I believe was like 360-something thousand.
Yes.
Between those two, his earnings will be what, over $4
million? $4.1 million.
That's not bad for a couple months' work handicapping horses.
Watching horses run.
And a title of Handicapper of the Year.
Well, gosh, I can't even imagine what that would be like. Definitely handicapping is a science, but it's not a exact science because it depends on live animals and what are they going to do on any given day. So to be able to reach those heights in a handicapping contest, you definitely have an eye.
Yeah, stay tuned for that interview coming up 9:40 Eastern. Should be a lot of fun. If you did miss any portion of the show, if you missed our interviews here in the first half of the show with jockey Vanessa Romberg, that was really, really cool. Great story. Head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can hear the podcast of this show and all of our shows, and also the interview that we did just a short time ago with Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing. All right, busy second half of the show. It kicks off next, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for all of racing's biggest events.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Behold the Ranch Songbird, a soul-stirring duel. Forever unbridled, two-lace-back bird. Songbird and Beholder, Beholder and Songbird. A cliffhanger that could go either way.
Here comes Lonnie on the far outside, and Brigator is coming too. It is Destin in front. Brigator, Lonnie on the outside. Destin and Brigator, these two come down to the line together.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
The California Chrome has gone into overdrive. He's two lengths in front. He's clear of Munda Hitch battling on. Then for sure wish, but it's California Chrome in front. It's Alchemy in Dubai. Chrome turns to gold.
Straight Pong on the inside and Masochistic still battling it out. AP Indian making no impression. Mind Your Biscuits is bubbling to the surface. Trey Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Trey Fong's the leader. Trey Fong has won.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum here on HRRN. A very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody tuning in coast to coast and worldwide. Happy to have you with us on this Christmas Eve edition of the program. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside special guest co-host this morning, that's Jetta Vaughns, who is sitting in for the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. He's off in California enjoying a little R&R with the family. He'll be back with me in this very chair next Saturday on the program. So looking forward to that and looking forward to a very busy second half of the show. If you did miss any portion, we told you head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, and follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. Well, so many positive things in the first half of the show. A issue that came out earlier this week, which was not so positive, is the disqualification of Masochistic. We told you in the first half of the show, Masochistic was second in this year's Breeders' Cup sprint behind Dre Fong. He was disqualified because of a steroid that was found in his system, a trace of a steroid that was found in his system. It is a legal steroid. Trainer Ron Ellis explained it to Jay Pribman of the Daily Racing Forum earlier this week. Jay reported on it in DRF, and he joins us now here on the Equine Forum. Jay, happy holidays. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. Same to you as well. Thank you.
Jay, start by walking us through the details of the situation.
Well, it depends on where you want to start. In California, the way positive tests are called is after an initial test comes back showing signs of an illegal medication, a split sample needs to be sent out to a second lab. And so when it was first sort of wind of something going on, it was in mid-November when the purses for all the races had been distributed, except for the Breeders' Cup sprint, and I came to find out that it was because the initial test on Masochistic had come back bad. I couldn't get anybody to say it on the record. So I basically had to wait until the second test came back, at which point then it's considered at that point a positive test. If the second test doesn't confirm the first, it's considered the horse was clean. So that all transpired within the last week. It was last Sunday morning when Ron Ellis was informed by the racing board that the second test had come back bad as well regarding masochistic, and that they were going to go forward with their case against him. And it was Monday when the racing board put out their brief two-paragraph statement on the matter, and when I spoke to Ron in detail about the situation. And so technically the horse has not been officially disqualified yet. He will be disqualified next week at a hearing. The board's going to have a hearing on December 30th to the stewards, I should say, at San Anita will have a hearing with Ellis. They represent the racing board. But Ellis has said that he's not contesting the facts of the case about the positive test. And so so the horse at that point will be officially disqualified, but for all intents and purposes, obviously, he's going to be there. We'll lose the second place purse money, and the purse is being redistributed among the horses who finished behind him in that race. So yeah. That's kind of the lead up to all that. The other facts about it are just that this is a drug, it's a steroid that there can't be any traces of it, and even though the amount that was found is very, very small, it doesn't matter. It's a zero tolerance medication, and because of that, the horse is disqualified. I think there'll be other ramifications from this going forward in terms of out-of-competition testing and how it works and the teeth behind it and who actually makes the final call. But in terms of what was in place for the 2016 Breeders' Cup, the final call was made up to the connections of masochistic. They were aware of the situation. They were made aware of the situation only 3 days out. It was a test that had been done 8 days prior to the race. It was such a small amount. They, after speaking to veterinarians, they were under the impression that it was most likely it would dissipate by the time the race was run and they'd be okay. They had done everything in terms of what was known pharmacologically about the medication. It's supposed to be out. It's a 60-day withdrawal recommendation. It was given 68 days out, but nothing is 100% certain, or the same, I should say, in every horse, and in masochistic, it didn't dissipate. So that's why we're at as we come to the end of the year regarding masochistic.
Yeah, and as you alluded to, it kind of brings up some other issues regarding out-of-competition testing and brings to light maybe a bigger issue in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Where does the industry go from here, Jay, in terms of handling these things moving forward in the future?
Well, I can't speak for what the Breeders' Cup or the industry will do, but I think one thing that most everybody would agree upon regarding this specific situation is that it didn't work all the way to the end like you would want it to. I think having out-of-competition testing is terrific. It's a great deterrent, but it doesn't matter if you're going to leave it up to the trainer and owner to run. I don't know that that's the best practices of a situation like this. You know, if this had happened, for instance, in Hong Kong, they have a drop-dead deadline prior to a race on the horse needing to have everything out of its system, and they don't leave it up to the trainer or owner to decide whether they want to roll the dice. The Hong Kong body takes you, they scratch you. And I would think you'll see, I think a reasonable adjustment to the current practice would be to have a drop-dead deadline. And this is just my timeline, not necessarily what will happen, but I could see a scenario, Mike, where the Breeders' Cup and or the state where Breeders' Cup is held says, unless you're completely clean by a week out or whatever, you can't run. And there's not this sort of last second where everybody's sort of looking at one another to make a decision, and it's left up to the trainer and owner. I think if you have like an ironclad rule, you're either clean by this date or you don't run, I think would probably be a better solution to what we have now. It's a tweak to where we're at, but I think probably a necessary one.
Yeah, as I was reading your article in the Daily Racing Form, I was surprised to learn that here in the United States, we didn't have that type of protocol already in place, because reading through the article and seeing that it is a decision of the trainer and the owner to go ahead and run if they want to take their chances with coming up with a positive, it just didn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that would be a logical next step, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, I really do think that would be a proper course of action, because, I mean, to me it's kind of like the Seinfeld episode where they make the car reservation, but there's no car there when they get there. It's like, well, you're good at making the reservation but not keeping the reservation. Isn't that the most important part of the reservation aspect? To me, the most important part of the out-of-competition testing is making sure horses who have medication in their system that they can't have on race day don't run. I mean, that's the point of it. And yet here we have a situation where a horse who had a medication in its system that it can't, that is allowed under current rules to be used, but well out from a race, it hadn't left the horse's system, and yet the horse still ran. That's not the ideal scenario. And so I could certainly envision a tweak to that where that's not, you don't have a repeat of a situation like this, because certainly nobody wants a repeat of the situation. It's bad for everybody involved.
Talking with Jay Pribman of the Daily Racing Form here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and you mentioned the withdrawal time and that this was a legal steroid given for therapeutic purposes. According to Ron Ellis, it was given 68 days out. The withdrawal time is 60 days, so with the 8-day cushion, you would assume that it would be out of the system. Obviously didn't happen that way, and that's why we're in the situation that we are right now with masochistic. And in terms of Ron Ellis, Jay, here's a guy who has had for 35 years pretty much a squeaky clean resume. He doesn't have the infractions of medication violations that we see from other trainers. He's always done things the right way. So from that perspective, this came is quite a shock as well.
I think that's true, and I think that's the kind of thing that enters into the when you get to the penalty phase of what's going to happen to Ron Ellis. But it would seem to me that if this was a situation involving a trainer who is a multiple offender, that the penalty would be looked at differently from someone who does have a very, very good record. I mean, in the last 10 years, Ryan Ellis's only violation was for a high level of a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. He's hardly, someone who is a serial abuser of medication rules. And I think that will come into play when you get to the penalty phase. Just one other thing I'd like to Ron Ellis did say that it was 68 days out from when the horse got that medication, but it's not just his word. When a horse is, in the case of masochistic, when he's treated with the steroid, you have to register that with the horse racing board and be put on the vets list for having been treated, because you can't run in less than 60 days after that's done. So not only did he say that, but that was registered with the racing board, and the racing board was well aware of the situation that he had at least been treated with that medication at that stage. We're not just relying on a trainer's word for it. It's in the records of the state governing body as well.
Well, I think that also plays into why you need to have an ironclad rule, because it was apparent to the CHRB. They knew about it, and they still left the decision up to Ron and to the owner, Samantha Siegel, who they want to run. It's $1.5 million race. It's the Breeders' Cup, and they wouldn't want to make the decision to not run the horse after all the work they put into it, you know? So if there was an ironclad rule, you have to test clean this many days out, it protects the reputation of racing, the reputation of the trainer, the horse, and the owner.
Yeah, Jay, does the blame fall more on the California Horse Racing Board or on Breeders' Cup, or maybe on both?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think the blame at the end of the day ultimately falls on the connections to masochistic based on the way the rules are currently written.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, it was their call. So, are there percentages that maybe could be attached to other parties in this? Yes, probably. But, how much so? That's very debatable. And it's, like I said, the way the rule is written now, they could not step in and say, you cannot run. They could, you know, the racing board could have advised them, I don't think you should do this. But the way the rule is written, they couldn't say, we're scratching your horse. They didn't have that authority, nor did the Breeders' Cup have that authority to do that. So in this specific case, based on the rules are currently written, you know, the bulk of the blame has to go to the people who were entrusted to make the final call on the horse. That's to me, the way of looking at it for this specific case. You know, what will happen going forward, as we were just discussing, I think I could certainly see different rules being in place. But that's what the rules were for the 2016 Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, and a tough way to miss out on the $255,000, but that's going to be the case with Masochistic.
I mean, you're looking, you know, the situation they were in is the horse had just, you know, basically trace amounts of the medication. We're talking picograms, trillionths of a gram.
Yep.
8 days out on the test, and they're favored in a seven-horse field for, you know, $1.5 million. That's a hard thing to just step away from. And, you know, I'm not excusing what they did, but I think you need to kind of look at it through the prism of what they were looking at. And they thought they were going to be okay, obviously. And, you know, now that we know they weren't, it's an awful optic for the sport.
Well, they towed the line, they took the chance, and now they're going to have to pay the price. Because 68 days out, yes, it's within the recommended withdrawal time, but that's just a recommendation. And that's
correct.
All it is. It's not an ironclad at 60 days going to be out because of the horse's metabolism.
Right. Every horse is different. That's 100% accurate.
Jay Pridman, Daly Racing Form, nice enough to join us and outline the situation with Masochistic. Jay, really do appreciate all the time, my friend. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Happy holidays, my friend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
And to you. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks, Jay.
Jay Pridman, Daly
Thank
Racing
you.
Form here on HRRN. And yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, that's a statement we hear all the time, and you wonder, what the heck does that mean? Well, that's what this situation turns out to be. I mean, it's one of those deals where everybody thought they were playing by the rules, but the one thing that does come out of this, Jetta, that jumps out to me is the fact that as an industry, at least in this situation, we don't have a drop-dead time to have that horse be clean or you're scratched. You know, and to have it left up to the connections, it's a gamble.
It is a gamble.
But like Jay said, $1.5 million, you're the favorite in the sprint.
And you put all that
work. Everything's going to be fine. If it's not, you get tripped up. And that's what happened here.
Yeah, but getting tripped up, it's so bad for our sport because, you know, the average non-horse person or
well,
who's experienced,
the bettors,
they hear anabolic steroid. They hear that and then they're like, oh, well, Ron Ellis, he's doping horses now. I read so many comments on the message boards about, oh, well, Ron Ellis has always been a dirty trainer. That's absolutely not true. But
absolutely
now that
true.
They're hearing anabolic steroid, that's something that's going to be attached to his name forever and to the sport of racing and to Masochistic.
And trying to play by the rules.
Exactly.
Let's make sure we get that out there. They
right.
were trying to play by the rules. They did everything as they were supposed to do
100%
by the rules. The bigger issue is that the decision to run and gamble on coming up with a positive test was left up to the owners and to the trainers.
To the people who are going to benefit from it most,
yeah,
who definitely don't want to see
right.
all their
and
hard
you know,
work go down the drain.
Samantha Siegel, the owners, they are
top
squeaky
notch.
Clean, top notch. They're not going to take a chance. Mm-hmm. And again, everybody just thought this is going to be something that's not going to be an issue. It turned out to be an issue, and that's what we're looking at now, and we'll see how it all plays out. But hopefully in the future, at least to reform as to how we mandate the out-of-competition testing and horses that are allowed to run, even with therapeutic medications in their system like this. We're going to get to a quick break. We'll come back. Your blood horse news update is on the other side of this commercial break, and then we'll be joined by Racing Secretary Rick Hammerly from Santa Anita to look at their opening day program, which comes up on Monday. That's all next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti, a seven-time Grade 1 winner and earner of more than $6 million, is now a classic producing sire.
and the sire of a Breeders' Cup Sprint winner with his first crop.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
In addition to Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Sprint and King's Bishop winner Dre Fong, Gio Ponti is also represented by Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs.
Sir Dudley Diggs and Julian Le Barou. Sir Dudley Diggs has hit the front. And Sir Dudley Diggs from Amis Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Castleton Lions is also home to Justin Phillip, who retired sound after competing in 23 graded stakes, winning 11 of those, including this dominating performance in the Grade 1 A.G. Vanderbilt at Saratoga.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
Justin Phillip's first yearlings have been well-received in 2016. For more information, visit CastletonLions.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
A two-year-old debut winner.
Danza and Permanent Captain streaking under the line together, and Danza wins by a hard-fought half length.
A Grade 1 winning and classic place three-year-old.
Danza, in a sparkling performance, is making short work of the Arkansas Derby field. Danza is the boss as he wins by five.
Danza, new for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
A late run from You Bought Her. She's charging hard but running out of time. Dearest is clear. You Bought Her is too late. Dearest to win the Sugar Swirl.
Dearest ran her career record to 5 wins from 7 starts with a game win in the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl at Gulfstream this past weekend, making the daughter of Darley Stallion Midshipman your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Midshipman, an Eclipse Champion two-year-old and the fastest winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, while defeating the future Kentucky Derby 1-2 finishers. Midshipman is the sire of 9 black type winners in 2016. Also, no stallion standing for less than 75,000 can beat his lifetime percentage of black type winners from foals. Among third crop sires, only Munnings is ahead of Midshipman's 13 black type winners. To learn more about Midshipman and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
More Spirit has a lot of ground to make up, but he starts to kick in now. Inside the quarter pole, Frank Conversation, Taves on Ice are head and head. Taves on Ice, a narrow lead. More Spirit finding his best stride, has to get to his stablemate, Taves on Ice. Taves on Ice and More Spirit. More Spirit gets a left-handed reminder from Gary Stevens, right up alongside of Taves on Ice, and More Spirit takes over coming past the wire. It will be More Spirit to win the Los Alamitos Futurity by a length and a half. Taves on Ice was second. I'm already there, up for third, then Urlacher.
Frank Miramati with the call, More Spirit winning the Robert B. Lewis Stakes. That was the last win for More Spirit. Returns in Monday's Malibu Stakes, and that's a really, really good race. We're going to talk to Santa Anita Racing Secretary Rick Hammerly about that entire opening day program. We'll do that here in just a couple of minutes, but first it is time to take a look at the top headlines and your Blood Horse news update. Crist and Beyer to be honored with the Eclipse Awards of Merit. Through extraordinary work as journalists and providing a voice for horse players while promoting positive change and breakthrough handicapping innovations across North America, the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, Daily Racing Form, and the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters, December 22nd, announced that Andrew Beyer and Stephen Crist will each receive Eclipse Awards of Merit for a lifetime of outstanding achievement in thoroughbred racing. This marks the fifth time the multiple Eclipse Awards of Merit have been presented in the same year. And that is your Blood Horse News update for this morning. For more industry news and headlines, you can head on over to Blood Horse Magazine and BloodHorse.com. Blood Horse Magazine is the thoroughbred industry's premier weekly publication, celebrating 100 years of covering racing, breeding, news, and more. If you're not reading Blood Horse, don't miss another issue. Sign up today at BloodHorse.com/subscribe. Yeah, congratulations to Steve Crist and Andy Beyer. You think about the impact that each of those individuals have had on the sport of thoroughbred racing, and well-deserved. This Eclipse Award of Merit, very well-deserved for both individuals.
Absolutely.
Rick Hammerly is the racing secretary at Santa Anita. We told you that they have their traditional opening day program coming up on Monday, but that program is loaded with quality, as it always is. You have a couple of grade ones. You have a total of four graded stakes on the program, and Rick is with us now here on the Equine Forum. Rick, welcome to the program, my friend.
Welcome. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Hi, Jetta. How are you guys out there?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning to you. It's a little, it's not really a California morning here, but we'll take it. A little overcast, a little rainy. It's been raining the last couple of days. So,
what's the forecast for opening day?
Luckily, the forecast for opening day is going to be no rain. So that's the key. And we're hoping to get into the 60s, and it should be sunny. So hopefully the sun will shine on us opening day, but it's looking good right now.
Rick, Jetta and I were talking about this at the top of the show. Jetta, of course, is somebody who grew up around the racetrack in Southern California and worked with so many of the top trainers there. What is it about this opening day, the day after Christmas, that makes it so special? Because it really is.
I don't know what it is. Well, first of all, it's my birthday, so that might lead something to it. So, you know, I just figured that, you know, they grew it around me. But anyway, I got two things that kind of stuck out. First, whoever decided to open on the day after Christmas, I mean, put it this way, like for me, no, that was always my birthday. I never had to go to school. I never had to work. I never had to do anything. It was always off. I mean, what better day is it than the day after Christmas? So it was just, it just became tradition here in Southern California. And although, you know, years ago we had Island Park open and then Del Mar's the big opening, but the day after Christmas signaled opening day of horse racing season in Southern California. So it just worked. So whoever came up with that. And then the second thing, whoever 70 years ago came up with the Malibu decided to say, hey, let's run a three-year-old race towards the end of the year going 7 furlongs. I mean, this race has just been a great race to put on the card to open up the season towards the end of the year and let these three-year-olds either continue on what they've been doing or use it as a comeback race to move on to further things as a four-year-old, but the combination of both of those things just seems to click for opening day, December 26th.
Well, speaking of the Malibu, you have to be thrilled with the way that that race came together. You talk about a bit of a head-scratcher from a handicapping perspective. You've got some big names in there, but this is a wide-open renewal.
It is. You know, of course, guys like me, I'm never satisfied. We wanted to get a couple more in there, but from what is remaining from the three-year-old crop, I just last night, as I was going over the card here and kind of getting a few notes together, I pulled out the Eclipse ballot, which just came to me the other day, and kind of was reviewing that. So I was looking at the three-year-olds that are listed on there. And of all the three-year-olds listed, to tell you the truth, there's only Arrogate is still in training. Obviously, we know what he's doing. He's pointing for longer things, hopefully run with us maybe on the first and then head off to the Pegasus. Connect is around. He's just starting to get pretty good here, winning the Pennsylvania Derby and the Cigar Mile. And Gunrunner, of all the listed horses on here, those are the three, well, I guess along with the Frong, who just got a little sick and what have him, that are left at the end of the year to run in this race. I mean, 3-4 months ago, as we think ahead, and we had visions of, you know, Nyquist running back here, and Exaggerator, and, you know, American Freedom, maybe those kind of horses. But for the end of the year, what we have, you could have said it better when you're talking about it as a handicapper. My gosh, you got a little bit of everything. Sharp as Tekka and Mind Your Biscuits are shippers from out of town, but they've both been here a while. They've been here a couple weeks, so this is not D-Wayne off the plane with them. So they've gotten acclimated. They've, you know, used to the weather and the track and the kind of routine a little bit in the morning. So, you know, keep that in mind when you're looking at making a bet. They're not, I think they're, you know, close in the Santa Anita rhythm. So don't, either know that going in whether you like it or not. So, and then, you know, how about Baffert? You know, has a grade one possible sprint champion. He's out and still has three more to throw in here. So, you know, it's as it always is, that 7-8 distance just gives a chance of a horse, you know, like I say, going longer to step back, or the ones that have been sprinting, you know, a little shorter to step forward. So, very happy with the rendition.
Could you make a case, Rick, that maybe the Malibu is even a better race without Dre Fong? And where I'm going with that is if you get Dre Fong in there, of course, he spiked the fever, so that's why he's not running. If you get Dre Fong, he's going to be, what, 1-5? In the Malibu, but without him, from a betting perspective, it seems like it's a little bit better race.
Well, you hit it right on the head, Mike. So there's two ways I like to look at it. Hey, the star's gone. Oh, no. Oh, we got a bunch of other horses in here that are pretty darn good, and it's going to be a great handicap race. So that's where we are. So always love to have the stars, and you know, we're in that mode out here where we get a lot of the categories as you saw from the Breeders' Cup. You know, we, meaning Southern California, had a pretty good, darn good Breeders' Cup because we have a lot of good horses out here, and that's the, you know, the double thing, especially for me. Yeah, we'd love to have these stars in the race, but who's going to run against them, and, you know, what kind of betting races it creates? So in this instance, love it. Love having, there was 10 to begin with, I believe, Native Hemp Scratch. So we've got 9 going, and I'll tell you what, it's a grab bag. And I was, you know, just taken in, especially where I am, and I'm hearing all the comments and people here, people there. There's one horse that I don't think I've heard two words about that's kind of sneaking in here that I think we need to look at, and that's Moore Spirit. So, you know, all the talk was on Dre Fong, I'll get that pronunciation right one of these days. But all the talks on him, and, you know, looking over here, and he got the shippers, and all of a sudden here comes Moore Spirit. As it turns out, the only grade one winner that is in the field. Look who's riding him, you know, Mr. Grade One, Mike Smith. And I tell you what, as I preach all the time over on Steve's show, Bob Baffert, I've been with him, you know, just for a long, long time. He does not give horses races. When you see him in a race, he's in there to win. He does not say, okay, well, let's just give him one and we'll hope for the best the next time out. If you see him in a race, he's well meant. So the fact that Moore Spirit is here, I know he's been off since May, but the drills have been very good. And most of Bob's drills, I feel sorry for some of the drills that he horses he runs against. Most of his good horses he drills in tandem with someone else. And not necessarily the same horse every time, but many times so. So a lot of times, you know, that horse that gets beat all the time, you know, you see him coming back and the horse with his head hanging, you know, he just went, you know, 11 and change and it wasn't good enough. But Moore Spirit has been in team drills here lately. He's been galloping out great. And I just think you need to keep a look at him as one of the kind of that silent horse that's stuck in here and doesn't have a lot of pizzazz, really looking at his PPs coming off a 10th in the Kentucky Derby. But I think, knowing Bob, this horse has been pointing to this race for a long time. So he wasn't a last-minute decision, but anyways, it's wide open.
You always look at a Bob Baffert horse on opening day at Santa Anita, no matter how long of a layoff they have.
Well, you look at him anytime, right? I mean, it's Bob Baffert.
Anytime, yes, Bob Baffert. But on opening day at Santa Anita, that's his bread and butter. This is his party.
Rick, how about the race before the Malibu, the Grade 1 La Brea, which is for the 3-year-old fillies? You draw a field of 8, and you mentioned some of the out-of-towners for the Malibu. Well, you've got a couple of good ones coming in for the La Brea, too.
Yeah, I think they might be the headliners as we look at it. Lightstream coming here is in the Brian Lynch barn, and Finley's Lucky Charm. From Brett Calhoun, who is very intriguing to me. A lot of speed. This is going to be her, you know, chance to be on the center stage here and see if she can show some of that speed. I mean, she's gone, you know, 8 and change, piece of cake, going three quarters. Never tried the 7/8 distance. That's a tough nut to crack sometimes for some of these. Many times going to 7/8, you see horses that have run mile, mile and 16th step back seem to handle that distance a little bit better than the ones going forward, especially, you know, this, she's had six starts, but I'll tell you what, she's won five of them. She really looks like a win type. She's going to be out there flying. Lightstream, who's the other shipper coming in, is a 7/8 specialist, so to speak, four times in the money with three wins. And coming off that Raven Run race at Keeneland, she's fresh. And Brian, of course, knows how to win a race. And we've got some interesting, speaking of horses coming in, we've got an interesting collection of riders that are going to be here today with Le Farou on Gulfstream and Brian Hernandez on Finley's Lucky Charm. If you go down one more to Constellation, I was looking last night, Dee Flores. I haven't seen that in that name in the lineup for a while. David Flores here for...
Wasn't he doing Bloodstock?
He's doing some down in Florida, I believe, and I wasn't quite sure, but, you know, happy to see David there. We got Joel Rosario on the ticket, Sharp Aztecas riders, Zayas is here, so Joel Rosario, I mentioned, Le Farou. So interesting group of shipping human and equine for the day.
Yeah, it's a tremendous card. Not just those two grade ones. You have the four graded stakes. Tell me about the other two. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left here, Rick. The grade three San Simeon Stakes, and then the last race of the program is going to be
the Mathis Brothers.
That's the one I was looking for. Yeah.
Well, the San Simeon is our standard three and up race down the hill, and as you know, we had it on opening day of the autumn meet, and it was the Eddie D, and we split it. So we didn't split this one, but we got 14 guys running down the hill like crazy, and this is definitely a race you want to look for. Horses that have been going long and cutting back to this distance. It just seems to be that those are the ones that come flying late in the stretch. There's a couple here that fit that. Drummer from the Neil Drysdale barn had one prep here in this country, and Ohio, who was in that aforementioned Eddie D and had a little trouble. So those are the two that look decent there. The Mathis Brothers Mile, another race restricted to three-year-olds going a flat mile on the turf. We figure we'd end up with a nice four-pack for the guaranteed $1 million pick four. This race is loaded, as usual, with the three-year-olds going this distance. Blackjack Cat has been one of my favorites following. Finally back in a mile, I think he's going to look very well in here for Mark Glatt. Love the post, Moonlight Drive for Bob Baffert. Mm-hmm. But like as I mentioned before, $1 million guaranteed pick four. Stake pick for it and the card. And let's not overlook, early in the program, we've got the third race is a maiden two-year-olds for boys going 7/8, and the fifth race is a maiden two-year-olds for girls going 5.5. And these two races are loaded. This is one of those ways you tuck away, and about 2 months you come back and you go, wow, look who was in that race. Speaking of Baffert, he likes to show off his wares, so to speak. He's got a couple in that... In that three-year-old race, going 7/8, Bronze Age for Judmont, making his debut, I believe, a $600,000 purchase. And then on the outside, Dabster went for a cool million debuting. He looks really sharp, and he's got another one in there called First Degree Burn coming out second time, who might, having that start, might be the best of them all. But there's Pavelski from Phil D'Amato. Jerry Hollendorfer has horses in there. And then the Philly race. In the fifth, I heard it was going to be some runners in there, but then I started looking down. I mean, this one's loaded, too. Of course, Baffert has a $575,000 beautiful princess in there for Colleen Shaw. And, you know, Mike Pinder has one in there that might run okay. Hollendorfer. So this is what we look at. It's kind of a Macy's sale. Come on out. See some of the stars of now and hopefully some of the stars of tomorrow. And, join the crowd calendar giveaway. Starting to get a little bit excited here about opening day. Of course, you know, Mike, opening day means nothing unless the Steelers win on Sunday. So
yeah,
that's a big deal.
That would really be one heck of a birthday present for you, Rick, if the Steelers can give you that AFC North title with a win over the Ravens, and a heck of a Christmas present, too.
Yeah, and for change, as you know, I feel very confident. So I'm just going to be watching the game. Not going to be that worried. I think full full strength this year, finally facing those guys. So anyway, it's going to be a great weekend, and I hope you guys have a great holiday at home with your family or wherever you spend it. And then get those presents tucked away, and all eyes on Santa Anita on Monday.
Rick, we appreciate the time. All the best. Happy holidays, and enjoy it, and enjoy opening day. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Jetta.
Thank you.
Rick Hammerly, like all of our guests, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. I wish he hadn't said confident talking about that Steeler game out loud on the air.
That was.
I wish he hadn't gone there. All right, we're going to get to a break. We'll come back and we'll talk to somebody else who is probably pretty confident going into the National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas at the end of January. That's Joe Applebaum, the winner of the BCBC. That interview is next here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwiches, Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What do we do?
Leave it to me, sir. Hello, boss? Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's.
Come in. Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power. Anchor Down has taken the lead once again, leaving Myositis Dan behind.
Passion.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish.
Performance.
Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Gainsway is proud to announce the newest addition to their stallion roster for the 2017 breeding season, Anchor Down. A son of Gainsway's perennial leading sire, Tappet, Anchor Down is a multiple graded stakes winner at Belmont Park who defeated Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Tamar Coase in the Grade 2 Kelso with a near track record time of 132.90 while earning a buyer speed figure of 108, the second highest dirt figure of 2016 at the distance. Out of a graded stakes winning two-year-old, Anchor Down is a half-brother to Grade 1 winning sprinter Sweet Lulu, who sold for $3 million as a broodmare, and a full brother to Grade 1 juvenile performer Iron Fist. Anchor Down, standing at Gainsway.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Arrogate, the solitary three-year-old, is sweeping after him in earnest as they race well clear of Melatonin. Frosted is next from Keen Ice. Top of the stretch, California Chrome is a length in front, but he faces an uncommon opponent today. Arrogate tries hard to reel in California Chrome. California Chrome with Espinosa going for the whip is still in front. Arrogate trying his heart out. California Chrome from Arrogate, a pulsating climax to the classic. Arrogate takes the lead and wins. Arrogate beat California Chrome. They were 10 lengths clear of Keen Ice, and Opportunity was fourth. Back in fifth position would be Melatonin.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, special guest co-host this morning, Jetta Vaughn's joining me here on the network, and we are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. That call from Michael Rona of Arrowgate defeating California Chrome in the Breeders' Cup Classic is a memorable one on a couple of fronts. Number one, it is going to set up a likely rematch in the $12 million Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream on January 27th. We will, of course, be there to bring you that exclusive radio coverage here on HRRN. You can visit our website, horseracingradio.net, for a complete broadcast schedule coming up in 2017. That broadcast schedule will be posted shortly. And it's a memorable one for Joe Applebaum, who grew up as a horse racing fan in New York. He attended Yale. He played football at Yale. He coached college football for several years and now has turned his attention to owning racehorses and competing in handicapping contests. Well, Joe won the BCBC contest at the Breeders' Cup, and he did it with a cold exacta, Arrowgate over California Chrome. So I know that has to bring back some great memories for Joe, who joins us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Hi, Jetta. And it sure does bring back good memories.
I would imagine that it would. And because of that victory in the BCBC, you now are looking at a potential $3 million bonus if you can win the NHC tournament coming up at the end of January in Las Vegas.
It's the first year they've had that bonus. To be quite honest, winning the NHC is a whole different cat. You know, there's going to be over 600 entries, and I'm just trying to focus on, you know, getting in a position to be alive on Sunday. I think worrying about that bonus could really cloud your judgment generally.
Yeah, it's almost, I guess, like a college football player. We'll use that analogy since you were a college football coach. You can't look ahead to the next game, right? You've got to take care of the business that's in front of you in order to get that big bonus. Kind of a similar scenario, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Football coaches are very similar to trainers in that they don't want to talk about anything more than the next day, let alone the next race. You know, you win a race and the first question you get in the winner's circle is, where do you go next? And I know that try to keep things in perspective, it's really important just to worry about, you know, what am I doing tomorrow? What am I doing in the next race? And as opposed to, you know, a goal that has several steps between now and then to achieve.
All right. Well, just in case it does happen in the NHC, I actually read somewhere that you had worked in your coaching career with guys like Wayne Corbett and Victor Cruz when you were coaching at UMass. Have you gotten in touch with Victor and say, hey, teach me how to salsa dance just in case I actually do win this thing?
I'm certainly not as cool a customer as Victor is, and I'll be doing some dance, but it won't be as smooth as his salsa dance, that's for sure.
Well, look back on that win in the BCBC and that moment when Arrowgate crosses the line in front of California Chrome. Did you know you had it won at that moment?
Actually, not at all. I figure, looking at the last several tournaments, I figured that to win, you're going to need probably in the range of 75 to 100,000 in total points. Even though it's dollars, it was points. I knew our number because it was, you know, quite simple math, was 65. And kind of from the way the field was, I assume we were going to be somewhere between like second on the high end and fifth on the low end. As it worked out, in retrospect, a lot of the guys in the top 15, because they already had fairly large stacks, didn't bet that much. I want to say only three of the top 15 players bet, made significant bets into the last race. And, you know, it was a little different tournament this year, in that the guys had accumulated a lot of money already, and I think, quite rightfully so, not a lot of guys were willing to risk that much money.
Now, what in your gut told you to put Arrowgate over California Chrome? I mean, I'm a Chromie to the core. I never would have thought Arrowgate was going to pull off that upset. What told you about Arrowgate that he was definitely going to be the number one horse on the day?
Well, the 126 buyer he ran in the Traverse had a lot to do with it. You know, the way I looked at it is California Chrome has been an incredibly consistent horse, right? He almost never doesn't run. He runs his race, he runs fast, and he runs consistently fast. However, he has never run as fast as that performance that Arrogate had. And so, you know, it's not California Chrome's a great horse. I know that the California people can get very sensitive about their horses out there, but he's a great horse. But sometimes faster horses beat you. That's why, you know, that's why we line them up in the starting gate. And to add it, and this is kind of plays into the Pegasus, I have a sense, and I don't really have statistics to bear this out, but that California Chrome is maybe a touch weaker at a mile and a quarter than he is at a mile and an eighth, and that he's probably a much more fearsome competitor at a mile and an eighth.
Talking with Joe Applebaum, the BCBC winner here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, the NHC is a completely different format than the BCBC. What tweaks will you make to your game plan going into the NHC in January?
Well, it won't be tweaks. I will be throwing out the cash money game plan. It'll go right in the garbage, and I'll have to come up with a totally different game plan because, as you know, it's a completely different style of tournament. The first 2 days are grueling, 18 bets per day, with over 600 entries. The kind of goals and the way to reach them are completely different in the mythical tournament. So we're going to have to draw something up from scratch here, and hopefully we'll be competitive.
Well, as somebody who grew up kind of in the backyard of Belmont Park, and you know, looking for the big payoffs there in the backyard of Belmont, to be sitting in this position now, what's it like for Joe Applebaum?
Well, from that perspective, it's really a dream, right? When you're 16 or 17 and you start out back there hustling $2 bets and trying to figure out, you know, how Herb McCauley is going to boot one home back in the day. I think it's great that there's actually now forums for handicappers, right, where guys can compete and know each other and we know who's done well. And so I think both the Breeders' Cup and NTRA should be applauded for that because we don't have enough of that. And to actually have won one of those events and to be in the NHC again is, you know, it's a dream. I mean, I wouldn't have ever thought this 30 years ago.
You called it your misspent youth, but obviously it's paying off.
It is now. It's taken a long time, but it's misspent in a way that maybe your grandmother wouldn't like you to apply it, but not misspent in the stories and the friendships and the memories that we have.
Well, when you were 16, kind of like when I did, people, they don't really take into account that you're actually paying attention, that you're actually listening and absorbing what they're saying and what they're doing.
That's for sure. Especially around horse players. And to be honest, and I know this sounds crazy to some, but not to those who were involved, you know, the very best horse players, you know, you have to really work hard to develop your analytical skills. And I think they're actually skills that all teenagers should understand, and the ability to make decisions under pressure and to make judgments are really important.
Joe, I grew up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, just a little over an hour from Saratoga. So that's my home track. It's where I cut my teeth on racing. And when I read in your bio that you quickly learned that the training camp in August with the college football scene was cutting into too much of the Saratoga meet, you made the decision to almost go full time with horse racing, and you have started Off the Hook Racing Stable, and you've had a lot of success as an owner too.
We've had some success as an owner. I guess our most prominent horse was a horse named Turbo Compressor, who won the United Nations. We started out, actually, we fell into it by accident, pin hooking many years ago. I think our first year was maybe 2003, 2004. And just by accident, We had bought a horse and sent her to Ocala to get trained and planning to race her, and they started calling me telling me that we needed to sell her. And I assumed there was something wrong with her. But no, Nick Demerick and Carlos Morales said, no, we're going to make a lot of money selling her. And we did. That was the first horse we'd ever bought at a yearling sale. It was a Siphon Filly. And so we started doing a little more pinhooking, breaking horses for others, and developing horses, managing the stables of some, keeping some horses ourselves, and generally kind of being all around the game. You know, some of the other horses, we pinhooked Informed Decision, who won the Filly and Mare Sprint and was an Eclipse Award winner. We bred and managed, managed Zevo, who was a pretty good horse 2 years ago here in New York for my friend Tom Coleman. So, yeah, we've kind of been surrounding this thing.
Well, in history, I can think of one other famous New Yorker who is a horse player turned famous trainer, and that's Bobby Frankel. What about you, Joe? Do you have any aspirations to maybe throw your hat into the circle, take out a trainer's license?
No, those guys work way too hard for me. They get up too early, and they work way too hard.
You get to show up at the track half an hour before post time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You weren't going to stump him, but the guy went to Yale. All right, he's too smart for that question. He's going to stick with what he's doing now because it's working for Joe Applebaum. Joe, really appreciate the time, my friend. Wish you all the best in the NHC, and we'll be cheering for you.
Thanks so much, guys, and it should be an exciting month of January.
Yeah, very happy holidays to you and the family, too.
You guys, too.
All right, Joe Applebaum with us here on HRRN. Again, that $3 million bonus awaits Joe if he can win the NHC by virtue of that win that he had at the Breeders' Cup in the BCBC.
It's pretty amazing. $4.1 million on the line for Joe.
I'd be calling Victor Cruz. I'd want to know how to salsa dance if I won. It's going to be over $4 million. You added it up earlier, right?
Absolutely. 4.1. I mean, what are you going to do with 4.1?
Yeah, just a great story.
Go dancing. You're being Vegas.
Well, and how about, did you hear him mention the pinhooking of inside information? We should have actually elaborated on that a little bit because I wonder what that's like. You pinhook her. I'm sure you did pretty well on that front. But then to see her go on and have so much success, I wonder if you kick yourself. And you say, man, we should have kept
her. We should have kept that one. I think that would be a kicking yourself situation for sure. But how can you know? It's one of those things you have to imagine.
Don't.
You have to imagine forward. Is it going to be more profitable to you to sell or to keep? Keeping a racehorse is an expensive expenditure.
Well, it is, and it's such a tough game that when you have an opportunity to get money out of the game and to get money off the table in this sport, sometimes I'll see people turn down outrageous amounts of money for horses, and the very next day it could all be over. So in my opinion, and I've never been in that position, so it's easy for me from this side of the table to come out and say things like this, but I find it very difficult for somebody to turn down, you know, a whole bunch of money. And I don't know what they pinhook inside information for, but if you get an opportunity, you got it, because you don't know she's going to turn out to be inside information.
Exactly. And you have to think about what costs have you already incurred up until that point. Is it going to make it worth it to keep her? Or is it going to make it worth it to sell?
Yeah. Yeah. So Joe Applebaum kind of ties into our first guest on the show today. And if you did miss any of this program, it was loaded with special guests. We covered an awful lot of ground, some great human interest, feel-good stories here on this Christmas Eve edition. We also talked about the situation with Masochistic and the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and then Rick Hammerly previewed the Santa Anita opening day. But our first guest was Vanessa Romberg, who is a 43-year-old jockey. If you missed it, if you're just joining us, she started her career at the age of 39. She left a career where she was doing very well in financial banking, decided, hey, you know what? I've always wanted to be a jockey. This is my dream. I'm going to do it. And then on December 11th, she won her very first race in the United States at Turf Paradise. But you think about Joe and his career as a college football coach. He had things going in the right direction with his career. And being a former football player at Yale, he probably always wanted to get into the coaching side of things. And then he leaves it all behind for horse racing. And we're seeing it again with Vanessa in that first interview where she just left everything behind and said, hey, this sport is too much. I got to be part of it.
Well, that just goes to show the magic of horses, the horses themselves. They're the first straw when anybody is getting attracted to this sport. You know, you get to see these beautiful majestic creatures competing and running, and it's exciting and it's thrilling, and when you win a race as a horse player or as a groom or having any connection with a horse, you know, it really does hook you, because like you said, it, or like I think Jeff Bloom said, it's really someone's chance to be part of a small sports franchise. And sports is universal. Sports calls to everybody, you know, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. We've all felt that in our lives. And with sports, you get the chance to cheer for something that's beyond yourself. And especially with horse racing, so thrilling.
Yeah. And even a guy like, again, talking about people that have left other prominent careers to get into horse racing, a guy like Jeff Greenhill, who, by the way, congratulations, just earned his 500th win as a trainer. He was a guy that graduated from Auburn in 1979 with a degree in chemical engineering, and he had an unbelievable career path that he was on. He left it all. He became a horse trainer, and now 500 career wins. Congratulations to Jeff Greenhill on that accomplishment. Been a fun show, a very busy show. We want to thank Vanessa Romberg, Jeff Bloom, Jay Privman, Rick Hammerly, and Joe Applebaum for being with us, and, of course, special guest co-host Jetta Vaughns. Jetta, it was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, we're back next week. The Pontiff of the Pick Four will be back with me for that program, so make sure you're tuned in to that show here next Saturday, a special New Year's Eve Day edition of the program. Don't forget to follow us on social media as well. And for our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna, and for Jetta Vaughns, we'll talk to you next time. Go, Steelers.